Welcome to the Voices of Legacy, hosted by yours truly, Pastor Carl E. Mitchell III, where we explore the legacies of individuals from the northwestern Ohio and southeastern Michigan area, featuring both well-known and impactful and yet lesser-known stories. We hope that the stories that we share in this program will be a benefit and encouragement to those that hear the stories of legacy and the beauty that encompasses the lives of the guests that we have. Today, we have a very special guest, my friend, and a great Toledoan by way of Chicago, none other than Mr. Bill William Sheehan, the owner of Sovereign Financial Corporation. Mr. Sheehan, how are you today?
Doing great. Doing
good,
great.
Good, good. Glad to have you. You have been a very interesting person to know in my own personal life. I really appreciate our relationship that we've built over the years. Tell me about yourself, where you're from, how you were raised, and all that.
Well, Pastor, I grew up in Chicago, Illinois. Actually, Elmhurst, which is one of the western suburbs. I was raised as one of six kids.
You're the middle child.
I was the oldest son, but the third born of Irish immigrant parents.
Oh, wow.
And the oldest son in Irish family is supposed to be what's called the primogenitor, which meant that all the inheritance is supposed to go to the primogenitor. My dad would open the door and say, "And you see what you're getting?" And we'd look out there, and there was just an empty yard. Says, "Have at it."
Oh, my goodness.
But it was a great upbringing, I think. Back on it now, and of course I look at it differently today than I did while I was enduring the lessons, which were not as readily received as I'm sure my father would have preferred.
Yeah, it sounds like it kind of stuck with you. How's your luck?
You know, it's been great. It's been great.
Considering, you know.
Yeah. No, I consider myself to have been blessed.
Yes.
I lived a blessed life. And lessons from my youth, I'm reliving again, yet again, you know, at this stage in my life, with a real appreciation for my parents and what they did and how they managed to raise six kids in a, you know, a challenging environment.
Well, I'll say from my own perspective, it seems just from my interaction with you in business, to have given you a spirit of service that you never really expressed, but you just see it in everything that you do and have been involved in, like some of the community initiatives and things that you've done, a sense of family and service.
Well, the family is a big part.
Yeah.
And you might not have known it while we were growing up. Mm-hmm. We were very active. Mm-hmm. We fought regularly. I mean, and sometimes even physically, you know, fought, which drove my mother crazy. She was a tough woman. God bless her soul. She had the job of raising us or creating a sense of order in the household of six hyperactive youths who my dad would go off to work and when he'd come home, you know, he wanted to make sure that there was a sense of order. So my mom was the warden, and so she ran things.
The disciplinarian.
Oh, she. We loved it when she said, "Wait till your dad comes home." At least a voice of reason might be there. She, on the other hand, was eager to issue the death penalty, thinking that it would discourage us from conducting ourselves that way, you know, tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, don't put off tomorrow what you can do today. Act right. And your educational experience kind of runs in line with that. Did your parents encourage you to get a college education?
Oh, they were all about a college education. Yeah. My parents came over on the boat, but they came over on separate boats.
Ah.
They grew up, they were raised in the Chicago area, and met, my dad met my ma after the war.
Mm.
He had come back, and like a lot of GIs, used the GI Bill to further his education, and he really believed that it was, you know, a parent's mission to raise their kids, okay, to, you know, one, faith in God, two, food on the table, and three, a sense of learn what you can do and build towards the future.
So in comparison to some of the people you may have grown up with, I guess there was a true benefit in having been a first generation, straight off of the boat, as it were, Irish, American, Catholic young man.
We would be wrestling in the family room. My mother would, be upstairs getting ready for church. My grandmother would be banging ballads on the piano about hating the British.
Oh, my goodness.
Were it not for the, it was later explained to us, you know, Dad, my brother would ask my dad, because he caught us wrestling where we weren't supposed to be wrestling. And this, if we asked, best defense is a good offense.
Yes.
So if we ask a question before he can advise us to get our butt back upstairs or whatever, we would ask, Dad, do we hate the British? And he says, son, you're an American. We love everyone.
That's awesome.
And that's basically how we were raised, was that, hey, why are you worried about somebody else's baggage? We're here. You've got a job to do. You know, and our job, as you was to go to school and learn.
Yeah.
We'd go to school. Sometimes the things I learned were not the things that were on the curriculum.
Well, that's awesome. What was your experience at the University of Notre Dame?
It was marvelous. It was the perfect...
Or how do you say it correctly? Is it Notre Dame?
No, it actually, the technical name for it is the University of Notre Dame du Lac.
Ah.
There are two small lakes on the campus. It is where an Irish Catholic goes. I was given a choice. I could go to University of Notre Dame, and if I got in, that was a good thing. Or the seminary was an option that was proposed but not well received by me.
Okay, Minister Bill Sheehan. Father, you know what? That has a ring
to it.
Well,
it was, you know, let's you know, hopefully at some point the Holy Spirit would descend upon me and enlighten me and straighten me out, and there'd be, you know, room for my soul in heaven at some point. I think that was what their thoughts were.
Yeah.
But I managed to somehow get in. Better yet, I somehow managed to graduate.
Well, did you play any sports?
I tried.
Oh, okay.
I tried. I was a practice dummy. I had the opportunity to be surrounded by and on the court with some fabulous athletes. It was a great time at the university. In fact, we had a weekend when I was 1 year where we were number one in the country in football, basketball, and in hockey.
Wow.
And yet it's not as large a university as most people might think. It was, at the time, it was less than 8,000 students. So everybody felt as though they had a part in it. And while I didn't score any points or make any plays, I felt like I had earned.
So you had a great appreciation.
A great appreciation for it.
Understand.
And there were some marvelous athletes there from football team included, I mean, we had Joe Montana and the cast of characters that won the national championship there.
Awesome.
In basketball, we had athletes. We were the only class to go to the Final Four in the school's storied athletic history. So, you know, there were some great athletes. And at the same time, they managed to also be very good students.
That's awesome. So how did that upbringing, that education, lead you into your professional career?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the reality that I was not near the athlete that I had hoped to be or become.
So disappointment.
That disappointment gave rise to opportunity.
There you go.
I needed to have a fallback, as my mom would say. Uh-huh. You need to have something to fall back on. And the education was of value. Yeah. Certainly learning the lessons that there's always someone bigger. There's always someone stronger. Yeah, there's better. Always someone faster. There's always someone better. But we still have a role to play.
Yes.
There's still a way we can contribute and be a part of things. You probably has led more. That has led more to my shaping of how I viewed how I was going to conduct myself in life than the technical aspects of finance or English or things that were learned in the classroom.
I can relate to this. Working for my father and developing real estate, it kind of gives you a mindset to see the benefit in everything, in every circumstance, in every property. There's always something that can really be either helpful or profitable in all situations.
Well, you focus on... In fact, there was a great athlete who was there who, when I was there, and I would practice with him, and his line was always, "You got to use what your mama gave you."
Yes.
This guy went on to make it to the Hall of Fame. I mean, he was, and yet I would submit to you, he was not the most physically imposing character.
But it was his mind.
It was his mindset, and he worked at his craft. Yeah. He worked harder than anyone else on campus or anyone else associated with the game that I knew of. That was mind-boggling how hard he worked at his craft to be good. His comment was, "I'm not here to be a Rhodes Scholar. I'm here to win basketball games." He says, "My aunt," and he was raised by his aunt, says, "My aunt insists I get good grades or she won't let me play basketball."
It's a good incentive.
Which was a different time. Today, you've got nil and all these things, people not considering it a privilege or an honor to play for an institution. Instead, they think it should be their right.
Yeah.
It was a different era. Yeah. It was a different era.
So that led you into finance and real estate?
Well, finance fascinates me. But the School of Business, which was very, very competitive at the time, also was inundated with students seeking degrees and advanced degrees and some marvelous technicians. So I took those classes knowing or believing that they would be, not only was I curious in that area as to how money worked, but that would be something I could use going forward in my career. I also added the English major because I thought, how do you graduate? How do you get a university degree and not have read Shakespeare or some of the other great works? And while I was not as the ambitious academician that my parents had hoped, and perhaps regrettably I wasn't, the bar was set high enough that I knew that there were things that I should probably read or know or become familiar with so as not to embarrass the university when they admit that I graduated from there a few years later.
Well, I would say that you've not been an embarrassment, none the least. So your experience led you into an interest that's been beneficial to you throughout the years. And I have to stress, my personal experience with Bill is he likes to get the deal done and is very creative in doing so. I'm just curious, what led you to think in that fashion, creatively, how to make things work?
I think this goes back to that out of the classroom and more on the court or on the field kind of mindset and the learning that the competitive and I perceived finance differently than maybe a lot of people do. And I was never really I was interested in what Wall Street did, how money worked, how commerce functions. But more so that you could accomplish what you wanted to accomplish, okay? And that, you know, and that's one of the things that I even had to explain to a prospective client this morning is that, you know, financing doesn't make the business. Mm-hmm. It makes the business work.
Yeah.
It's the blood. Mm. It's the body and the mind that do great things.
Yes. That's the portion.
The body and the mind can't function if it doesn't get the nutrients that are provided by the blood, and blood is the currency. I'm not a big believer in he who makes the most wins, mm-hmm. you know, or just because it, you know, everybody has a different idea of success. Mm-hmm. Somehow along the way, I became obsessed with winning, knowing that winning took on different forms.
But not without having a benefit to someone other than yourself. I've noticed, and again, my personal interactions, I have to almost apologize. I've had a lot with Mr. Sheehan. It seems as though it's always on your mind how what you're doing is going to be of benefit to someone other than you, while protecting your financial goals as well. And that's a little bit different, especially in the business lexicon nowadays. I mean, most people are out for themselves and that's it. You seem to be a little bit odd in thinking about other people.
I've been told I'm odd for a myriad of reasons, but as it relates, I think people express it or go about it differently. There are a lot of good people out there, and there's a lot to be learned by people. And I learned this definitely when I got to Notre Dame. I realized that I believed, as an 18-year-old young man, that I was the whole package. I was like, I had it all. Uh-huh. I had attitude. I had an insight into the game. I could make things happen. I was lacking only in three things, and that was size, speed, and skill. Okay.
Okay.
I found out what skilled athletes really were.
Yeah.
Okay. I found out what size and speed. There was always somebody bigger, somebody stronger, somebody. But if there's a way in which you can still participate in the game,
yes,
you can still contribute to that victory or do something. Maybe it was no longer being the star as it was envisioned when you're a kid wanting to be the star of the team. But it was, hey, I can do these things, and if you'll do this, we win.
Yeah, and you still enjoy your role
today
in that.
Today, I inject that kind of a mindset into this is what you want to accomplish. You think that it's the financing, but really, if we do things this way, here's what we'll achieve.
Yeah.
What does that do for you? You know, what does that do for me? That certainly, if it's, you know, let's face it, if it's my plan, then who better to execute it than
you,
me, and or the people who we've selected who are best at what they do. And so I found that in the higher you go, there aren't people who are good at everything.
That's true.
But if you want to achieve greatness, you need people who are great at things. And so let's bring in somebody who's great in this area. Bring in somebody who's great. Can they work together? How do we get them to work together to do these things? And then how do we, by doing that, we all achieve.
Yes. And you don't necessarily have to like each other, but you have to respect each other.
What I found is that people find a way to like each other if they're being successful in achieving the things that within their world
kind of the
they're
Jordan,
good at.
Jordan, what's the guy, Dennis Rodman type of situation. I mean, people tend to forget that Rodman actually played for the Pistons and they literally hated each other. Then they end up on the same team.
Right.
And winning.
You appreciate what that other person brings to the table. You know, and sometimes what gets lost in business or on teams or in other things is that respect for one another.
Yes.
You know, it's and it becomes what I call a money chase. Mm-hmm. Well, how do I do it? Well, I believe that if you're successful, you're more likely to, and your success comes from interactions with others. Then those others are usually pretty happy.
Yes.
We can each, there are fewer stresses and strains. I'm not working outside of my comfort factor. Yeah. Outside. You're not expecting me to do things that are superhuman because I don't have those skills. But if we match marry together the skills that we each can bring to the table,
instead of
do those
each
things.
Throat. Yeah.
What I find is people who are contributing to that success enjoy that success.
Yeah.
And enjoy being around one another because they were each able to achieve some level of success. And to me, I've got the emotional maturity of an 8-year-old. Success, as I define it, is what I obsess over. And it's, my wife says, it's winning. It's always, you always have to win, you know? Well, why play if it isn't your goal to win?
Well, after 38 years of marriage, I would consider at least in that portion of your life, you've definitely been a winner as well.
I have been a winner. You know, if I've made good choices in my life, I says that was certainly one.
you looked up there, Bill. Anyhow, it's the luck of the Irish. So from finance to insurance to real estate, now you're the boss. you're heading up your own corporation.
Probably the toughest role I've ever had. Mm. And yet it's because the very thing I had a problem with growing up was dealing with authority figures.
Ah.
Which is why I spent so much time in detention.
Yes.
Which is what quite nothing malicious, nothing, just always more than what the nuns were.
Well, that was interesting in and of itself, because I think you said that you were on the national honors.
Well, yeah, my
at the same time,
my record,
breaking the record.
I linked the record.
Of being
I'm
in
probably
detention,
the first person to be inducted into the National Honor Society, while at the same time maintaining the most consecutive days in detention.
Oh my goodness.
I think we refer to that as an ignominious distinction.
It is. That's funny. But it's the contrast of a life well lived. And thank God you're here for us to talk about it, because I think people can really glean a lot of lessons from thinking of more than just yourself, but yet still protecting what's theirs, their identity, their skill set, realizing who you are, not trying to be somebody that you're not. I mean, those are a lot of good lessons that pretty much embody the book of your life.
It's nice of you to put it that way.
Well, I think so. But
the book's still being written.
That's exactly right.
That's the way I like to think about it.
That's exactly right. Well, as we're getting ready to, I thought we were going to be a 2-hour program today to wrap up this interview. Looking back on your career and your life's journey, do you have any advice for others that may be aspiring to do great things and have success in finance and other fields?
You know, I read an excerpt, and I'm not a voracious reader of books as much as I am of other people's works and thoughts and things like that. And one came up, and I found it fascinating. They say that children laugh 1,500 times a day, and the average adult, and I've got the numbers wrong now, I'm sure, you know, might laugh 15. But that the resiliency of youth comes from our own natural willingness to accept and appreciate and not take so seriously some things. I mean, when we talk about my youth, and I can't help but think of the number of times I would look at my brother and my brother back at me, shocked and astonished, hoping nobody saw what we just did. And we somehow survived our own stupidity or whatever it was. But it was like, nobody saw, good, let's get out of here. Today, I see kids and youths putting their whole life on the internet and trying to get a picture of it or a selfie.
Attention.
Never.
Yeah.
I still don't do selfies only because I don't have the time or the attention span to pose and take it. I've always been more, life should be lived, not witnessed. And that's, if you like what you're doing at work, do it.
That's, you know, a quote.
If you like what you pursue, that, because regardless of what your job is, you're going to have days that you hate, mm-hmm. and days that you have to do the difficult stuff that you don't like. But if overall you can say, yeah, I'm contributing. Here's mm-hmm. how it is. I get this kind of satisfaction out of my work. So this is why we do it. You understand and appreciate the tough stuff, and you do it. Mm-hmm. And you go back and appreciate all the fun stuff that is a part of your job. Yeah. It becomes a part of your life.
Yeah. Well, I'd say I think that, and it is my personal opinion, you're called to do even greater things. I know that you were you in a coach in a basketball league of some sort?
I've coached a lot of youth athletics. Found it as, you know, sports was a safe harbor for me growing up. Yeah. And as long as I was on a field or on a basketball court or something, I wasn't in trouble. There was a... And so, yeah, I coached youth sports. Mm-hmm. And then during the meltdown, mm-hmm. 08, 09, when things were, and then there was a problem locally with funding youth mm-hmm. athletics, and the schools were having trouble with their budgets and whatnot, mm-hmm. we opened up, I got with a couple other gentlemen and got mm-hmm. them to form what was called the Academy Athletic League. And it was a basketball league. But it was really an activity for kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. I look at it as, hey, if you're going to be the next LeBron James, you know, there's plenty of opportunities for you.
I bet you there's a lot of stories even in that experience.
That experience was awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. But what about the average kid?
Yeah.
Who's not 6'9", who's not, mm-hmm. you know, incredibly gifted, like, who just wants to hang out with his friends, you mm-hmm. know, or do things. You know, my belief was that the male brain seed germinates at a much different pace than my sister's. Okay, they're less interested in school, but go to school because of sports or whatever. Now you don't have the sports. What do they do? And there's all kinds of energy that if you don't find something for them to do, which was, you know, I'm just looking at my own upbringing. I said, the trouble will find me. I don't have to look for it. It would find me. Yeah. And, you know, next thing you know, you're throwing snowballs at moving cars.
Wow.
And which is one of my favorite activities as a young kid. And yet when you stop and think, which you don't think as a kid, that, oh, gee, I could cause an accident.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the statute of limitations might cover.
Fortunately, the statute of limitations has run up. I think I was guilty and whatnot, because to me, it was just another activity about winning. You know, if you hit the moving vehicle, hit the further one, you won. And no, I didn't want to scare the lady driving the car or cause an accident. But those are things that could have happened.
Yeah.
So as I drive by and my car gets pelted by snowballs, I just say to myself, payback is tough. You know, as long as it's just a snowball and not a brick.
Thank God. Thank God. Or not an accidental rock inside of the snowball. So this is the question of the hour, Mr. Sheehan, as we conclude this insightful interview, which I appreciate. I thank you so much for coming. And we reflect upon your remarkable journey. Curious to know one thing. What do you believe your legacy is? And perhaps more importantly, what would you like it to be?
Well,
we have about 3 minutes.
I'd like to think that the book is still being written.
Yes.
Still trying to find greatness somewhere in the things that I do or that get done, to where you can say I contributed.
Yes.
If, you know, when you're a young kid, you want to make the team. Then you want to be the star of the team. Then you get older and you want to be just a role player on a winning team. And then you go on and you coach.
Yeah.
In life, you want to get to a certain point where you can actually, there's a lot of knowledge.
Yes.
There's a lot of experience that you'd like to be able to share in a manner that somebody can benefit from. Whether it be through my work or through those other things, if I can contribute.
Memberships on boards like Mom's House. And
if I can contribute, yeah. Then there's always something to do. You know, then you're not an old guy looking and wondering what to do in retirement.
Yeah.
You're still active, and that's what I also have witnessed is the number of people who, you know, supposedly worked so hard to get to their golden years and then find out they're not so golden, or they retire and die.
Yeah.
Shortly after, they don't outlive their money, they die.
Yeah.
Because really, we express ourselves, maybe not through our work, but how we conduct our work says a lot about who we are as people. And when you lose that platform without knowing where it goes from there, that can be pretty daunting. That can be pretty difficult.
That's a good answer. Well, we appreciate you coming and speaking to us today.
Appreciate you inviting me and listening to me.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'll be honest. I listen to you quite often, but nevertheless, we thank God for you and what you're doing in our community and the benefit of all the different projects that you've been involved in. I think your legacy is already etched in stone. And even as you do even more, I'm thankful for you, sir. And that's just my pat on the back for Mr. Sheehan today. Thank you for listening today with the Voices of Legacy. We look forward to our next podcast coming soon to a platform near you. Have a blessed day, and we'll see you soon right here at the Voices of Legacy.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission. For more information about the Voices Around Us podcast project, please visit WGTE.org. You may also listen to all Voices Around Us podcasts at WGTE.org/VAU, the WGTE app, or wherever you get your podcasts online.